Well, thank you very much, Jen, and thanks once again for hosting this call with the Public Water Systems. We appreciate being able to be together like this. A reminder that the call is recorded, as all of our calls have been. Our practice is to take the recording, a link to the recording, and post it on MassDEP's website with resources for water suppliers that you can find, you know, again, on our website. So we will post this recording there and near the FAQs. I'm joined today by Yvette DePisa, the director of the Drinking Water Program, and Damon Gooderman of the Drinking Water Program. We also have representatives of our regional offices on this call, again, recognizing the importance of all hearing things together. And if there are issues that we need to follow up on in a real-time manner, we want to make sure that people are all hearing the same thing so we can take follow-up measures. We are also fortunate to be joined, as we've been each time we've been together, by Jane Downing, the director of the Drinking Water Program for US EPA Region 1. Jane, if I could invite you to unmute yourself and provide us with any EPA updates, that would be very welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Jen, and I hope everyone is keeping safe and doing well. I do have four quick items to go through this morning or this afternoon. The first one is, if you all remember, on March 26th, EPA issued a temporary COVID-19 enforcement policy. It mostly affected how enforcement discretion would be covered for wastewater systems. It also talked about drinking water systems and the obligation of those systems to continue to comply with regulations. That policy will be terminated as of August 31st. So this was a heads up I gave you previously, but I wanted to reiterate that. If you want to learn more about it, the website is epa.gov/enforcement/frequent-questions-about-temporary-COVID-19-enforcement-policy. So again, as of August 31st, the temporary policy has been terminated. The second item is another reminder that there is going to be a national COVID survey. It will be released in early September. It will be released to cover about 5,000 utilities across the country, including wastewater and drinking water. The purpose of this is to essentially gauge the current and anticipated impacts of the pandemic to those utilities. So we want to let you know about it. It will include community water utilities of all sizes. The four areas of consideration are the supply chain, the workforce, financial resources, and analytical support. So if you see something coming your way in early September, you'll know that that is something that we had planned for, and we invite you to participate. The third item is also very exciting. It's the announcement about the N95 masks that were procured by RCAP, Rural Community Assistance Program Solutions. We talked about that the last time. There were 65,000 masks that were brought together by a private collaborative. And we wanted you all to take advantage of it. Granted, it was 65,000 nationally. I checked this morning. There are still 10,000 available. The audience, the people that we wanted to reach out to, include operators and managers of small, rural, and tribal systems. So if you are from a small utility, a rural utility, and think you can be covered, I very much invite you to take advantage of this. They are offering the masks at a quantity of 10 masks per utility. Jen has provided the link in your chat, the chat room. It's a complicated link, but if you can get that, and click into it, then you we hope that you'll be able to get at least 10 masks per utility. If you can't do that, then I invite you to send me an email, Downing, D-O-W-N-I-N-G dot Jane, at epa.gov. There's 10,000 available. I'd like them all to come to New England. And the final item is just this morning we heard from CDC that they updated the FAQs as it relates to risk to wastewater and drinking water. So if you want to check that out, you would go to the CDC coronavirus website. It's cdc.gov/coronavirus/2019/FAQ/water. And slight subtle changes to both the wastewater FAQ and the drinking water FAQ. And I think that is it for now. Everybody, keep up the great work. Thank you again for the opportunity to join you, and back to the commissioner.
Thanks, Jane, and thanks for all those are very, very timely updates. And we'll make sure, you know, particularly we'll take a look at the most recent CDC guidance. I know that will be important and probably something we'll want to talk about in further on a future call and make sure that we have links to all this information. So thanks for that. We also are joined on these calls by Mike Maynard, who is the chair of our licensing board. Mike, I was, if you don't mind unmuting yourself and providing us with any updates, we would certainly welcome that.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Just a couple of quick things. The Board of Certification is still issuing temporary emergency certifications. I just, for some of the people in the listening audience who recently emailed me, I will do the research that you asked for me and get back to you tomorrow without mentioning any specific names. The other thing is applications. If you can file your application and tell the operators to file their applications online, they are issued a number by DPL, which makes it easier to track, as opposed to sending in hard copies. So they'll receive a number that begins with DW121. So that's an important number when they issue it electronically, and that makes it easier to track that particular file. The board is still reviewing applications with DPL. As I mentioned last time, DPL has had a staff turnover, and they seem to be very responsive to the operator's needs and to the board's needs. So the board is happy that they've kind of reconstructed DPL's, the executive director, assistant executive director, legal counsel, and the administrative staff. And they have been very responsive over the last couple of months. So the board is reviewing applications and we're playing catch up with those. So if you're having an issue with your license, you can send it to drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov and also CC me, michael.maynard@mass.gov, and I will chase that down with DPL and respond. The other issue is that there's been a shout out for an operator shortage. I know it was mentioned at a meeting earlier today, the SIDWAC meeting, which is the Safe Drinking Water Act Advisory Committee meeting. And I just wanted to kind of update everyone as to what the drinking water program is doing to promote operators. So we've been working with UMass. We ran a training with UMass, Mass Rural Water, Franklin Regional County of Government to promote a VSS T1 D1 training. We had 25 participants in that class. And it was helpful to have the regional association from FERCOG, Franklin County, because they were able to reach out into their membership. And we've had a couple of good candidates that took the class, are taking the exam, and hopefully that will fill some of the need of basic entry-level operators in Franklin County. We're planning on running another one of those in the fall in Cape Cod. And also, one of the things is UMass is providing internships of trying to pair up water suppliers with, operators, internships. So if you are a public water system and you want to host an intern, some of them are paid, but there's also, if it's helpful, there's only so much money to go around. So if you can, if you're interested in hosting an intern or paying for an intern, please, you can send that email to me, michael.maynard@mass.gov, and say that you're interested in the program, and I'll make contacts with UMass. That's about it. So back to you, Commissioner.
Okay, thanks, Mike, and thanks for all those updates, and including the internship program and the training opportunities. I know that's important, and an ongoing thing that is important both when before COVID and obviously after COVID. So thank you for your work on that. Couple of other things that I just wanted to say before we get into some of the questions and answers. We did get two questions in advance of this call. We are going to open up the line, or if you want to submit a question via chat to Jen Peterson, you can certainly do so. There isn't really anything new on the funding front. As you know, we in state government are continuing to operate on a continuing budget while we wait to see what ultimately will happen at the federal level. There was some activity, a few weeks ago. I Congress is in session this week because of the convention, but we're continuing to try to stay on top of developments in D.C. and see whether or not there will be pieces that will help municipal governments, utilities, et cetera. So no new news on that. Finally, one thing I just wanted to note that after we finish our questions and answers, Jen Peterson has invited Vonda Naral from the Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs to provide an update on the drought, and that's going to happen right after we get through the questions and answers. So, with that, we did get two questions. I might turn it over to Yvette to both give the question and the answer. This first question is about lead sampling in schools and what to do under different scenarios. So Yvette, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself and both relaying what the question is and what guidance we would provide, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Marty. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, the question was on lead, and it said, despite the good guidance provided by DEP, regarding lead sampling in schools, the guidance is still somewhat ambiguous. It seems clear if the school is fully closed, lead sampling is not required at this time. However, if the building is only partially open, say for administrators only, or open in a hybrid model where some days students are in and some days out, is lead sampling still required? So this question is about the fact that schools are opening in all types of capacity. Maybe it's 25%, it's 50% going back into the schools. We're not quite sure. So the answer is, obviously if the school is closed, you don't have to sample. But if the school is reopened and water is available for use by some or all students, teachers, or staff, then lead and copper sampling is required in accordance with existing lead and copper rule plans. As long as someone is in that school having access to the water, whether it's the teachers, the administrators, the staff, the students, the program needs to continue with its sampling because we want to make sure that when the schools are not providing water that would be exceeding the action levels. Reopened schools with voluntary lead sampling plans as part of the lead contamination control at programs. We are just encouraging them to continue to sample when the schools are reopened, regardless of the level of operational status. But the most important part is that we want the schools to follow the flushing guidance when they reopen. So you get to move all that stagnant water out before you have the students, administrators, staff, et cetera, go back into the schools, and that you continue to bring fresh water into the schools so you practice periodic flushing as well as following whatever sampling protocol you have in place. And I guess the last take home message, and it's a very important one, is managing lead sampling is very complex. So we are stressing that we are available to help you walk through the process. So if you're a public water system doing the two school samples and you have any questions, call your regional office. They will walk you through the process. If you're a school practicing your voluntary LCCA program, call the Boston office or contact us at program.director-dwp@mass.gov, and we're going to put that information in the chat box, and we are available to walk you through it. Earlier today, we talked to a Safe Drinking Water Act Advisory Committee, and we made it clear that this is very complex and that we are available to help everyone through the process. Thank you, Marty, for the first question.
Yeah, thanks for that, Yvette. And, thanks for the offer of outreach and assistance for, schools that are, trying to think about, coming back online partially or whatever, based on what the school plans are. Very, very helpful for the required testing. And then on the voluntary testing, I was just going to ask a question. We've been trying to make sure that the federal money we've gotten for sampling the program that the Clean Water Trust has in place for replacing fixtures. I know this is a group of public water suppliers, but if they are dealing with school systems, those programs are still also out there to help schools if they're dealing, particularly if they have issues that they've identified through this voluntary testing program. So encourage people to, take a look on our website. Those programs are all still active. I believe the next question, I think, Yvette, it's also for you to answer. It's about reporting and how reporting would happen. So if you wouldn't mind reading, telling the group what the question is and what the answers are that you've developed, that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Sure, Marty, this is Damon. I'm going to cover that one.
Okay.
So the question is, what is DEP's expectation for systems mailing hard copies of electronically submitted reports? So we were having a discussion earlier today with the advisory committee on this. I guess I'll just sort of first distinguish between what we're talking about here in terms of electronically submitted reports. If you're using EDEP, which is our online portal, your laboratory can submit water quality reports on your behalf, there's no requirement to also mail us a hard copy in those cases. That system has been blessed by EPA. It's official. The signatures are all captured using, whatever the appropriate technologies are to ensure that you are who you say you are and that this is something submitted on your behalf. So those are not covered by this question. What we're really talking about here is at the start of the pandemic, when there was immediate closure of all the Mass DEP offices, and there was some concern about U.S. Postal delivery, as well as the other courier services delivering mail to us. We opened up the option of emailing us through the program director email address anything that you would normally mail to us, and that would ensure those submittals got to us in a timely manner. But the important point here is that email submittal is not blessed for the whole bells and whistles for ensuring that you are who you say you are and that, you know, it hasn't been hacked by someone else submitting fraudulent data. So mailing hard copies is still required for all those submittals. And that mail should be sent in the normal timeframes that you would usually use to get us the these reports on time. So hopefully that clarifies the two different flavors, but I'd be happy to elaborate.
Okay, thanks, Damon. And as I believe those were the questions we got in advance, so this might be a good time, either if we're getting questions through the chat or additional questions came in via email, Jen, either on the topics we just talked about or other topics, you know, this might be a good time to identify those.
Sure. I don't have any additional questions right now. I maybe have a bit of a follow-up for Damon on the mailing hard copy. When you say sort of the same time frame, is that so if the reports are due the 10th of the month, that hard copy still has to get to DEP at that same time, even though you've emailed it within that?
Yeah, so that's a federal requirement. And I think we've talked about this earlier. And you know, I know that the memo from the EPA headquarters also covered this. We don't have the authority to waive federal requirements that are in state regulations. So the 10 days after the month or the 10 days after the monitoring period is still required to be met. And the official version is the hard copy version. We have reached out and hoping that the utilities would also keep us informed of this to inquire about whether or not US mail is being slowed down by any of the activities that are going on right now to address you know, their cost shortages or overtime requirements and that kind of thing. So if anyone is aware of mail being slowed down, we'd really appreciate knowing that, but so far we haven't heard that. So our expectation is that we're still capable of meeting the federal requirement to meet the timelines.
Thank you for that clarification. I think there was some confusion maybe about that, because I think, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, it was, you know, mail the hard copies maybe as soon as you can. I don't know that we were, the specifics were put out about the timeframe. So I think the clarification is good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of the early concerns we had was, were people capable of, you know, getting into a place to gather the information that they needed to submit to us? And, you know, were staff regularly capable of doing the normal things? I think we haven't really seen that kind of concern yet. So hopefully we have that kind of in our rearview mirror already.
Great. So if you have a question, again, you can type it into the chat. You can email me at jpeterson@masswaterworks.org. If you're unable to either email or chat, you can unmute yourself if you're on the phone. That's *6. All right, so not hearing any questions or seeing any questions for the commissioner.
And one thing I'll say, in case something does, you know, come in the next few seconds or so, you know, we are continuing, we are planning at DEP to continue these calls with you as you know, as long as you're finding them useful. I think we continue to find, you know, this kind of session very useful to, you know, share latest developments, and if there are clarifying questions to address that. So I think our next one would be planned for September 8th, right after Labor Day at this time. So we are still planning to go ahead with this, even as we're moving into the fall season now. So we're looking forward to continuing to work with you.
Great, so we will send that information out for September 8th at 2 p.m. All right, last call for questions COVID related to the commissioner before we transition to our discussion about the drought.
I will say if something does come up like late in the call, I know you're going to switch to drought, but I'm planning to stay on the call throughout. So, you know, if something does come up later, we can always circle back.
All right. Perfect. Thank you. All right. So with that, I'm going to invite Vandana Rao to unmute. And Vandana is the Director of Water Policy for the Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs. She chairs the Drought Task Force with MEMA. And obviously you're all aware that we are in the midst of a drought. And so Vandana wanted an opportunity to sort of update you on the state's actions and entertain any questions that water suppliers have relative to drought. And I understand that Dwayne Lavangie is also available if there are specific questions related to Water Management Act issues. He might be able to address those. So again, I'll ask you if you can to please put any questions you have in the chat. And then at the end, if you're unable to chat or email the questions, we can have you unmute and ask. So Vandana, I know that you have a brief PowerPoint and hopefully you're able to share your screen.
Yes, I can. Let me do that in just a second. Can folks see the screen?
Yes, great. If you just want to put it in play mode.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the introduction, and thank you, Commissioner Suberg, for making the time on this call for a discussion on the drought. I really appreciate being able to talk to all of you, and I just have a very short presentation. I wanted to make sure we were all up to speed and sort of on the same page in terms of what our drought declaration process is like, what we take into consideration as we, as a state, declare drought levels, where we're at right now, and what type of outreach efforts and other efforts the state has been engaging in over the last few months. But I do also want to spend some time hearing from all of you in terms of how is this drought impacting your communities. We do obviously hear from Jen Peterson, who is a great representative of all of you at our meetings, and she provides a really good overview of conditions. But since we're all on the call today, if there are other things that you'd want to add or want for us at the state to know of in terms of impacts to your water supply or any other aspect of your operations or your communities, you know, we should feel free to voice them right now. And I can also put my email in the chat window a little bit. So you are welcome to send me any email updates later on. So with that, I just wanted to very quickly, you know, we have a drought management plan that the state has developed and updated a couple of years ago. I do want to acknowledge Ann Carroll, who's also on the call. She's the director of the Office of Water Resources at DCR, and she and her staff play a very critical role in all aspects of the drought management task force, and in particular on the data and the analysis piece. Without her and her staff, I don't think we'd be where we are or be able to do the type of work that we do on the drought analysis. So I do want to acknowledge that. And so she's also here to answer any questions that folks may have. So the drought plan basically breaks up the drought into four levels. And obviously there are many ways to go about doing this. And if you read the plan, it does lay out four levels of drought, level one being a mild drought, level two being significant drought, level three is a critical drought, and level four is an emergency drought. We hope we never get into an emergency drought condition. It's been many decades since we have. And so all our efforts at mitigating or trying to get communities to prepare for this is so that we avoid such an extreme condition. But these are our four levels. Level zero is not really considered drought. It's a normal condition. And to be able to come up with these distinctions or these various levels, we look at six indices or six parameters. I know some of you are joining this by phone, and so you cannot see the slides. I'm happy to make it available to Jen later on so she can distribute it by email to folks. But our six indices are precipitation, stream flow, groundwater, lakes and impoundments is one, KBDI fire danger is another, and then crop moisture. So we look at six different indices. Each of their indices has a sort of a level of thresholds that are divided into these four levels of drought and what would be considered as normal. For precipitation, stream flow, groundwater, and the lakes and ponds, they are broken down by percentiles. We look at the percentile as a statistic. And for the fire danger and crop moisture index, there are units that range in the case of Kichabayram from under 200 to about 800, and the case of crop moisture index from minus one to minus four. So we've kind of grouped them or put them into these four buckets of level one, two, three, and four drought. So we've divided also the state into some more manageable units. We have seven regions in the state: Western region, the Connecticut River region, Central region, Northeast region, Southeast region, the Cape Cod region, and finally the two islands are part of the islands region. So the idea was that not every part of the state receives rainfall or sees drought impacts equally because of the topography and the geography, as well as the weather patterns in the state. These kind of distinctions made a lot of sense and have been around for over 20 years. And so we've continued to look at each of these regions with a distinct lens and look at the various drought indices for each of these regions. And I am showing you a map now of the regions that are with the watersheds superimposed on them. Okay, so where are we at right now? That was just a quick snapshot of what's in the drought plan. There's a whole lot more in the drought plan, obviously. And this time in our drought plan, when we updated it, we added quite a bit more on drought actions, both at the local level and at the state level. And our drought actions are kind of divided into two buckets. One bucket talks about preparedness, or what we can do prior to the onset of a drought in order to prepare ourselves better for a drought condition. And then another set of actions talks about what to do once we are in a drought. So a lot of what we are doing at the state level right now is following what's in the drought plan. And so once we take a look at all these indices for these regions, the Drought Management Task Force deliberates, looks at the data, deliberates on them, listens to what Drought Task Force members like Jen and others report to the task force on local conditions, various impacts across various communities and watersheds. And the Drought Task Force makes a recommendation to the Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs on drought level for each region. And it is finally the secretary who declares the drought level for each region through a press release. So typically that press release comes out maybe a day or two after the drought task force meeting is held. Okay, so right now we are in a level two significant drought in each region of the state. Every one of our seven regions is in this condition. Until the drought task force meets again and looks at updated data from the previous month, this condition holds. So what does this really mean? I mean, a lot of people, including I'm sure many of you, ask, okay, what does it mean for me in my community, or what does it mean for me as an individual resident? And so what we have done this time around is we have started to put out some infographics and some outreach materials, which the next couple of my slides will show, to really try and communicate to the general public what it means when you're in a certain level of drought, as well as what it is that an individual can do, in addition to what maybe any of you who are municipal representatives can ask of your local residents. So we've broken this infographic, as you can see, into two parts. What does it mean to be in a drought, and what is it that somebody can do? And then right at the top, we have the drought level and the drought map. So this is updated each month and put out via EEA social media as well as I also send this out by email to anybody who's on my drought management task force mailing list and anybody else, frankly, who's interested and would want to use this for their own outreach efforts. We've also created, and we had something like this in the past, but it was mostly a Word document. This time we worked with a consultant to design some tips, just like you saw on the infographic in the previous page. We have tips for saving water, both indoor and outdoor, and sort of laying it out in a little bit more easier to understand, visually more appealing type of format. So here are some tips for saving water outdoors. And, you know, this is something we want people to be careful about and doing all the time anyway, but in a drought, I think our consciousness is heightened. And I think we all as a collective can and very easily be doing a lot more in restricting our own water use outdoors. So here are some tips on what can be done. And here are some additional tips on water conservation indoors, which obviously we can't forget, not all our water uses for outdoor purposes. A good portion of our water use, even in the summer, is indoor. And as we get out of the summer watering months into the fall and winter, more of our water is used indoors. So we want to make sure that we continue with that message about how we can conserve water within our homes and businesses. And finally, we wanted to also develop some outreach material for that can be put out through social media outlets, through Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And so, again, we worked with this consultant to develop some much more visually appealing material. As you can see here, here are four examples with brief, succinct messages. And we have some that are for general water conservation, but these four and maybe about a half a dozen more, we have developed specifically for drought conditions. And as you can see here in some of these, there's the one on the top left says water saver tip, drop for drop. During a drought, let your lawn turn golden, making it more resilient to dry conditions. It'll green back up when it rains. We have something about complying with water restrictions during a level 2 drought. Water restrictions ensure there's enough for wildlife, people, and fire protection. And something that we have learned through our own work on drought impacts, and in particular with some of the folks that work on fire protection, is that these drying conditions that we're seeing, especially in the top 6 to 8 inches of our soil, really the demand for water for fire protection is significantly increasing. So although in the case of many communities, from a water supply perspective and from a demand of water from residents and businesses, one may feel, yes, you know, I have enough water. What concerns us more and more is whether we have enough water and pressure for fire protection. And certainly there are some hotspot areas around the state where until about a week ago, the concern was fairly high. So many reasons for us to be saving water, and I'm happy to share any of these graphics with you folks. We'll also be making them available on our website. There's a URL at the bottom there. I don't know if you can see it or not. It says mass.gov/MA-drought-management. So a lot of our tips and outreach materials are posted there for folks to download and use. So I'll stop there. I'm happy to answer any questions. And of course, I have Anne and Duane here who can also answer some more detailed questions that you may have as it relates to their work. And I also would love to hear from all of you in terms of how the drought has been impacting you this year or your community this year.
Vandana, I do have something that was sent to me previous, so I'd like to just bring that up. I think now's a good time. So one of the comments that was made to me about the dry conditions and, of course, the concern with fire is in those areas where there is adequate water supply, mm-hmm. Certainly allowing outdoor watering sort of helps the dry situation from a fire danger perspective. So not sure, I guess it's more of a comment than a question, but something certainly to think about if there is adequate water in the aquifer and the water system itself has adequate supply, that's maybe an argument for allowing watering.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the areas that tend to catch fires are not necessarily our front lawns, and that's where people want to water. So, you know, not watering in our lawns and landscape that are in our front yard may or may not impact the, in terms of decreasing the fire hazard or the igniting capability of brush and other parts of our communities that seem to be more prone to fires and where fires are catching. So yeah, intuitively that may make sense that let's keep watering to make sure that our soils are damp and our landscapes are wet. But if we have to think ahead and think long-term and not knowing exactly how long this drought is going to last, wouldn't it be better for us to save that for those real fires and for the long-term impacts of drought? In 2016, 2017, during our last drought, you know, there were a lot of lessons learned. You know, some communities were running really low, and perhaps we were not quick enough in assessing or declaring the drought. And in some cases of some communities, they may not necessarily have looked closely at the data from the previous 6 months to realize that their water levels are going down. So a lot can happen locally, I mean, that may not prepare us. So I feel like if there are things that we can do here and now to minimize our water use and use it only for things that are really needed, it protects all of us and puts us in a better position all around to deal with the impacts of drought in the short and long term.
The other observation was, so it's encouraged to not have people watering during the day, obviously. So the messaging is after 5 p.m. before 9 a.m. This water supplier noted that between 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. and 9 a.m. are pretty much heavy water demand everywhere. So from their perspective, targeting after 10 p.m. and before 4 a.m. might be the more appropriate message to avoid the high peaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Something that we can certainly take into consideration and put that as part of our message. Obviously, we want fewer and fewer people watering at a time when evaporation is high. And if water suppliers are feeling that the demand on their systems then suddenly tends to shoot up more because everybody, you know, people tend to be watering after 5 p.m., maybe there's a way for us to think about how to stagger that even further.
We have a question in the chat. How are the USGS gauge station data used in determining drought level?
So for both stream flow and groundwater, we use USGS gauge and groundwater monitoring well data. So all our stream flow is real-time gauge data. So all of that comes into consideration when we look at the stream flow index, the part of the six indices that we look at for drought determination. So absolutely, the USGS gauge information does come in. And for each region, we look at a cumulative of what's going on in terms of all the gauges within that region. And I don't know if you want to add anything, feel free to unmute.
Well, I'm not sure what level of detail the questioner was looking for, but you know, we're very lucky that most of the stream flow and groundwater sites have a substantial period of record, in most cases going back through the drought of the 60s. So we look for each month within each drought region at the full period of record, looking at the medians and then developing percentiles from there to basically get a level for each indicator for each region. So you get you have the groundwater, you know, level for each region and stream flow level taken from those, from that gauge data. And again, I think Bonita said all the streams are real time. Most of the groundwater wells are, and the rest are monthly tape downs. With experiencing these conditions that some people are calling, you know, flash drought, where conditions have deteriorated very rapidly, we're trying to move to fully real time on these gauges. And in the past, beginning of the summer, we were able to have folks go out twice a month to measure the groundwater. But ideally, we really would like all that to be real time.
Thanks, Anne.
We have a comment. COVID has decreased our demand significantly as it relates to commercial and municipal usage. So if you can say anything good about it, I guess it's timing with the drought is good.
Yes, I guess so. However, what's also happening at the same time is that with pretty much everybody staying home, we're all looking at our lawns and our landscapes a lot more on a daily basis. And so what we're hearing is that water use on the residential sector has been going up. Because, you know, one, people have more time, two, people are seeing it, are probably not happy with their drying conditions. And for whatever reason, the first reaction people seem to have when they see brown lawns is, oh, I need to water more, and not necessarily correlating that with the drought and drying conditions. So I guess there is some balance here with less commercial use, and but we don't have too much of too many water intensive businesses left anymore in Massachusetts. And so, you know, our in many communities, our largest water use, our largest sector is the residential sector, which seems to be going up a little. But I'm sure in some other communities, not having enough, not having businesses open has certainly helped to some extent. I like the silver lining that that your commenter has highlighted.
Dwayne in the chat has posted his email address for folks who have questions related to Water Management Act registrations or permits, and so that can be directed to dwayne.lavangie@mass.gov.
And I've put my email address as well if anybody has any thoughts. Oh, you know what? I think looks like I may have done it, only not to everybody. Let me make sure I do that.
Is there anyone on the phone who has a comment or question who's unable to use the chat or email who'd like to unmute themselves?
So if I could ask folks who are on the call, and especially those who are representing municipalities or working with them, how has the drought affected you or your systems locally? Are you seeing decreases? Have you started to look at your emergency connections? Have you used your emergency connections recently? Do you know if they work? It'll be helpful for us as we think through broadly how communities can best be positioned to respond to conditions like this, what it is that you're experiencing, and if the state needs to provide assistance, where and how that could be directed to.
Vandana, while people are thinking about that, I might just raise one issue, which I know that I've raised with you and the Drought Task Force in the past, and that certainly remains a concern to us, is the releases from reservoirs. And, you know, I know some of the communities on the South Shore have release requirements, and I know one was releasing at least up until, I think it was June 29. And to your earlier point about, we don't know how long the drought will last, and it's important to conserve what we can. Certainly, it does concern us that a system would be releasing water from the reservoir. So I don't know if you have any initial thoughts on that, but that certainly, at least from our perspective in the drinking water supply, doesn't make a lot of sense to us as we head into summer to be releasing water out of reservoirs.
Yeah, and I think several reservoirs do have those thresholds or cutoffs for release, depending on how much water exists in the reservoir itself. You know, when we at EEA look at drought, we're looking at it much more holistically. And of course, human use comes right to the top, but we are equally entrusted with the responsibility of ensuring that our environment and other habitats are also maintained and are also protected. And so when we think about issues like this, we think about more broadly and what impact is this happening on wetland resources or fisheries or other habitats. And I think the general approach is that human use or anthropogenic use always trumps everything else. But while keeping that approach, how do we still balance it and make sure that we're not depriving everybody else or all the systems of water? So as much as we can do to balance them, I think that's the way to go. When we're seeing that, you could probably put into your management plan for each reservoir what those thresholds are to sort of balance those uses. So it would probably need to be an individual reservoir operations basis, rather than sort of a blanket approach. But I do hear you. I mean, there was a concern. It was back in 2016, 2017 as well. And I think that particular system has established these thresholds and is not releasing.
I'll add, sorry, this is Duane. Yeah, we've worked closely with those systems and they've adjusted the plan. So, I mean, it's an iterative process where we try to be protective of the water supply need for the community. But, you know, where there's surplus, at least a point where we're comfortable and they're comfortable, obviously, these weren't handed down requirements from us. They were issues that the community had worked with for a while to develop. So we've made some changes to it and we'll continue to watch it. I'll also add an answer to a question. I received a call from a supplier today. You know, we did a mailing on Monday, I believe, last week after the drought meeting with recommendations or reflecting the guidance the drought plan has. And water suppliers frequently ask, well, that's not what my permit says, so what do I have to do? Mm-hmm. Your permit requirements are what you're legally required or obligated to follow. We certainly would not have any problem with someone going more stringent adopting the recommendations that are attached. But if you have to know what you're doing or what you totally are committed to, follow your permits. So all of you look at your permits. If you have any questions, what's in your permit and what you're required to do, contact me. Again, my email's in there. But I'd say I get 3 or 4 questions each time we do a mailing with guidance attached.
Thank you for answering that, because I get that question frequently as well. And I had posed that to Vandana and in terms of what are truly the requirements versus what are sort of recommendations. And Vandana, I don't know if maybe you want to just recap what you had told me in the email, sort of the strong suggestion.
Yep. Right. And so obviously what's in the permit is what is required. During a drought, when we have, and what's in a permit is often what's happening under a regular operating schedule and in some cases during a drought as well. The task force puts out a recommendation, the secretary makes a drought call or a declaration, and what's in our drought plan is really sort of our collective guidance or recommendation on how we should be moving forward during these conditions. So in particular, our outdoor restriction recommendations are really recommendations, but frankly, they're very strong recommendations. We really want everybody who is in that level of drought to be doing at least what we are putting out as those recommendations. Nothing is holding you to do that, but I think we're all good citizens of the Commonwealth and are interested in the same sort of long-term sustainability of our water resources and our way of life here. And for us to all make some small sacrifices to do that along the way doesn't seem like a huge ask. So if you all as a community can help us spread that same message while of course also meeting the mandates that are in your permit, that's really where we would want to be. We really strongly recommend and encourage folks to be very conservative in how much they, you know, how much water they're using, especially for non-essential uses. So that's the best we can do right now. Our drought plan, you know, or what's in the plan is not legally binding. It is a policy document. It is a recommendation. It is what we think is the best sort of approach and management strategy for a condition like this.
Thank you for clarifying that. We do have another comment that has come in the chat. We've always had restrictions in place during this time of year, so its impact has not been as significant as it may be for others. So I think that's the response to your asking for input.
Yeah, and that's great to hear, because having those restrictions obviously helps tide communities during this time. We're still, I would say, I mean, I don't know if I should say it, only a level two. It is still a significant drought, but if conditions get worse, I think that's when we'll start seeing a lot more impacts to agriculture, to private wells, to public water supply systems. And so I think having these restrictions in place really pushes that eventuality out way more. I know that in the 2016-2017 drought, even for our ag sector, agricultural sector was quite badly hit with huge economic losses for many farmers. But those farmers that had water conservation technologies and smart irrigation and things like that, or drip irrigation, really were not affected much. And they took advantage of the grants and the technical assistance that our Department of Agricultural Resources provides. And when we went back and assessed some of those, they didn't seem to have as much impact as some of the others. So these type of sort of conservative approaches do help us in the long run. So I'm happy to hear that, you know, you're not really seeing those impacts to the water supply side as yet. So which community is this? I see that the comment is from David. David, which municipality do you represent? Okay, Milford. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? We do have one that has come back in that's non-drought related, but I want to make sure we cover everything drought related before we go back to the drinking water issue.
So can I ask very quickly, I mean, would, so the social media assets that you're seeing up on the screen right now, those of you who are joining us by your computers, is this something that would be useful for you? Would it be helpful for you to use these in your own outreach efforts within your communities? This is, of course, just a snapshot and example, but you know, we have some more that we'll start to make available.
And they look nice. We're lay up to send to Steve at MWRA. We'll probably steal them and post them on our website as well. So
terrific.
Yeah, as you know, we're trying to, you know, although we're not under mandatory restrictions, we're trying to push the use water wisely message. So good looking graphics make it easy. Thanks.
Okay. Vandana, can I put in a pitch for the Healthy Lawn, Happy Summer?
Yeah.
Created some social media animations that folks can download and use and send out on Twitter or however you use social media. And I'm the last person who should advise anyone on social media. But if you Google it, go to the Healthy Lawn, Happy Summer, look to download the toolkit, and then you'll find the graphics for the animation. If anyone has any problems finding it, again, email me and I can send you the link.
Hi, this is Karen Duby with the Southeast Regional Office. I thought the picture with about the brown lawn was especially informative. I thought it was dead, but it's and we do see it perk up a little bit when it gets a little rain and then it goes mm-hmm. back brown. But I think the photos are excellent. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Damon, who's much faster with his computer than I am, for the link to those animations.
And just so folks know, as a preview, we're also developing a water conservation sort of clearinghouse, toolkit, website, we call it one of all of those, where we're looking to put information, helpful tips, social media assets like this, as well as, you know, just basic information, water use calculator and things of that nature to make that available for residents, for the ICI sector, for the ag sector, for municipal use, things that would be targeted to what municipalities would typically, or all of you who are on the call would typically be using and looking for more feedback or information on. So we're putting it all together in a single water conservation page. And in the top left, you see that logo that says Conserve MA Water. And so that is the logo that we've developed for this. And it's there on all these social media assets here. So our we're trying to pull together everything that DEP does, that all our agencies are doing, as well as what's in the water conservation standards, all into one single website that is much more user-friendly than a 70-page Word document that's the conservation standards, but make it in a way that is succinct, that's visually appealing, that's easily downloadable, and clickable to more information for those that may need more detail. So, you know, keep your eyes open for that. Hopefully in the next month or so, we should be able to release that. But in the meanwhile, we wanted to make sure that some of these messages got out, and these will be available on our drop page.
Great. And since you have an audience of water suppliers here, if you'd like to talk about maybe expansion of the reservoir network.
Well, thank you, Jen. always appreciate the opportunity to talk about that. I think it was maybe a year or two ago, we did offer a short presentation that was run by USGS where they talked about, you know, how it would work if you wanted to join. And essentially, there's a few systems that are currently on it, but you would get real-time water level data for your reservoirs. And we would greatly benefit from having that, again, real-time data. So we could offer that again if there was interest. Separate from that, we are trying to get more DCR-owned lakes and ponds into the network because it's sort of a combination of reservoirs, impoundments, and also natural water bodies. So it's a reflection of surface water storage. So it's a little bit of, we recognize in the plan, it's a little bit of apples and oranges, but it's all, we do still find it to be very helpful and informative as part of our deliberative process. So I guess if anyone is interested, I can put my email in the chat window as well, and I can tell you more. I could connect you with USGS. I think the cost to me seemed very reasonable when they last presented. So we could set something up in the future again and do it online version.
Sure, we could work with you on that.
Great.
All right. Just a couple more things in the chat. Milford Water Company likes the graphics, said they would use them. And they also did let people know that they haven't let irrigation systems be connected to their water systems since 2006. So, all right, so any final thoughts on the drought, Vandana, before we move on?
No, again, you know, I guess continuing with my message of really strongly recommending everybody to follow the drought plans, outdoor watering restrictions, which is handheld only outside the hours of or after 5 p.m. and before 9 a.m. And feel free if you need to restrict those even further to a shorter window, that you go ahead and do that in your communities, as it may be helpful for your own water supply systems. But you know, anything that you could do to help us get the message out, promote The idea that using less for any of this is not the end of the world, really. Most of our systems outside will bounce back, and indoor water use can be reduced by quite a bit, and yet you'll have enough for most of your basic needs. So I think just being able to promote that message that it's okay to use less, and to help sort of the broader picture would be great. Again, going with what Anne just said, if there are ways in which your reservoir network can be part of our network, you know, we'd love to include those. So we'll please stay tuned for something we may be able to pull together with Jen for you folks. So appreciate
your time.
And go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to add on, because I do know that a lot of communities have hours different than 9 to 5, you know, where I am in Ipswich, it's 7, you know, after 7 and before, or after 7 and before 6, I think, or Vicki can correct me, or maybe it's the reverse, but I think folks can modify these, am I correct, Vandana? We could get them a version where they could put in, you know, the hours that are applicable to their community.
Yep. I mean, these are all JPEGs, so if there's something that you want to switch out, I think it should be fairly easy to do. If not, if you need something a little bit more specific while we still have our consultant on hand, we'd be happy to create something that's a little bit more specific for you in terms of a message. I think that's probably it. And, you know, feel free to email me if you are starting to feel and see impacts locally. Obviously, you all are really busy and dealing with this on a day-to-day basis, but, you know, shooting me a quick email to let us know, and also know if there's anything that we at the state can do to mobilize either technical assistance or financial assistance. That's something that we could certainly think about and help to do.
Hi, this is Karen Dewey again with MassDEP Southeast Region Drinking Water Program. I just wanted to remind folks, it's a difficult thing for the public water suppliers. While we have the drought situation on, at the same time, the drinking water program is asking public water suppliers to reach out to low use or low flow or no flow businesses, because even though they may have backflow, they have backflow prevention devices to prevent cross connection to their own, to the entire system. The whole issue of stagnated water within drinking water lines. So it'd be challenging for the state to put out both messages at the same time, but we don't want to forget one or the other. Appropriate water saving measures, absolutely necessary, but the flushing of these low flow buildings that may have some use but lower use than normal to prevent the stagnation that'll have issues with total coliform, legionnaires, Legionella, those sorts of bacteriological contamination issues. So it's quite a battle for systems. So I just want to say to those public water suppliers that are still on the line, we appreciate everything that they're doing during this challenge to maintain, potable, you know, good, clean drinking water for the public water supply systems and their public. It's quite a challenging balance. So thank you for a few minutes of time there to let me put that out there.
Okay, well, Jen, this is Marty. I know we're over the hour, but I would remind, you know, based on Karen's comment, that in our FAQs, we actually have information about flushing buildings. You know, again, I think we've been fairly consistent about the need and the importance for that. I think, you know, it is a nuanced conversation, but I think we have been pretty consistent about reminding people, Karen, about the need to flush, and we will continue to do so.
And Marty, that's a great point, and that leads us into the final question I had, which had come in after we started the drought discussion. So the question was, can DEP have flushing information for low, no-flow businesses statewide broadcast via TV, radio to get the message out to the public to assist public water systems in efforts, since the duration of COVID-19 is much longer than anticipated?
Yes, it's a really excellent point. And I was just speaking with my press office on Friday and with Kathy Baskin about how do we do a fresh round of pushing the word out. And it's not just with, you know, this community, which is pretty attuned to this. We're trying to get to the managers of real estate entities and people that manage buildings so that they're thinking about it. So, you know, absolutely, we're thinking in the same way, and we're going to try to push something out again this week, or I hope this week, where we can remind people of the importance of considering stagnant water and the best practices that we have up on our website.
Great. And I will, this conversation has brought me back to 2016, when there were many questions in the fall about fall flushing that water systems do. And, you know, because of COVID, some of them had to skip their spring flushing schedule. And certainly they might, you know, be still in difficulties with staffing levels and now the drought, but fall flushing will probably happen in many communities. And so, you know, additional messaging perhaps around that, so that it's going to be difficult to have drought out there with systems, you know, flushing hydrants at the same time, but it's certainly necessary from a public health and water quality standpoint.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. And, you know, we'll be happy. And, you know, if there are individual situations, again, you know, reach out to our, you know, our regional offices who, you know, whether, you know, one way or another, we'll get you the guidance we need, and we'll hit the balance of, you know, being thoughtful about dealing with the drought while also making sure that the potable water in those buildings is safe.
Great. So just one closing comment on the graphics. It would be great if the graphics that Vandana displayed had a location where communities could add their own logo and reference to their drought status. So Vandana, if you could.
Yeah, and so this was definitely something that was on our mind as we were creating these graphics. We toyed with the idea of actually putting a square box somewhere on this that would say your logo here, so you could put yours. But we also recognize that not everybody may be doing that, putting a logo. So we kept the text minimal here so that the graphic speaks more to it. So for example, in the top left one, you could certainly put your logo at the top left corner, you know, where the green grass is darker and green there. And similarly for each of these photos, you could, you know, put your community logo or whatever else your logo you want there, so that it's clear that it's a coordinated or a combined message, both from the state as well as at the local level. If there are other thoughts on how we could do this, or maybe have version one and two for each one of these, where one would be where we would pre-identify a space for your logo, we're happy to do that. But I know that in other cases, people may want to just share these graphics as is without the logo. And so we'd want to provide them with a version without that box.
Great. All right, with that, I'm not seeing any additional questions. And I do want to thank Vandana, Duane, and Anne for answering the questions and comments about the drought. And Commissioner Stuberg, thank you again to you and your staff for making yourself available for this regular conversation. I will just say that, you know, I think we all agree you water suppliers are doing an excellent job with more challenges than maybe you've ever had with COVID and the drought. So thank you all for all that you're doing to continue to provide essential service in the face of these many challenges. So with that, September 8th is when we will have our next DEP public water system call. And I hope that you all have a great rest of your summer and a happy Labor Day weekend, and we'll resume after Labor Day. Thank you all.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Jen. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.